Our Dharma talk this morning will be given by a Boundless Way priest and senior Dharma teacher, and also our Shuso, our leader of practice for this coming and going retreat, Laura Wallace.
So, good morning. I'd like to talk a little bit about a chapter that's in the third section of the book that we're looking into, this Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Shunryu Suzuki. And part three is titled Right Understanding. And the chapter that has really been alive for me is titled Emptiness. And this quite a can be quite a provocative word, this emptiness. And so what immediately sprang into my mind when I saw the title of this section, this chapter, were the words of another great Zen teacher, D.T. Suzuki. And he says, emptiness, which is conceptually liable to be mistaken for sheer nothingness, is in fact the reservoir of infinite possibilities. I read these words not too long ago, and it just made my heart sing. And it still does. This phrase, infinite possibilities. This great universe in us, this oneness, this emptiness that we have been singing about on this sesshin, the reservoir of infinite possibilities. So I offer that as context for the other things I'm going to talk about. So as I read this chapter, many things leapt off the page, but I am going to just look into some small snippets that all wove together for me. And in some cases, I am paraphrasing. So Suzuki Roshi says, each one of us must make her own true way. And when we do, that way will express the universal way. Each one of us must make her own true way. And when we do, that way will express the universal way. Quite a thing. Hearing that we must make our own true way. We were brought to laughter the other day when, in one of the Dharma talks, someone mentioned about getting the guidebook, and this guidebook for being human, this guidebook for how to live our lives. So many different circumstances and situations when I have longed for a guidebook. Let's see what to do here. Oh, page 101. Okay. And no guidebook. no instruction on how to live this human life. Of course, we think we have one. We've been taught various things by our parents, our grandparents, friends, colleagues, society, culture. We're taught lots and lots and lots of things. But I think that for me, some of them have been useful and some of them have not. As Melissa Roshi spoke in one of her talks about that we have many, many ways and much, much practice for turning away from what's here, and not so much practice in turning towards. And this practice, this Zen practice, this is a practice of turning toward what is here in this moment. Each moment, moment after moment, as this reservoir of infinite possibilities, this aliveness comes into being moment after moment after moment. So how to do this? How to find our own true way? How to make our own true way? Suzuki Roshi goes on in this chapter to offer some suggestion. He points out that if we have very definite ideas about what is here or what is going to happen, he says, in that case, we cannot be serious with the moment that exists right here. This word serious leapt off the page at me. I had never thought about being serious with the moment, but it was so resonant for me. It went into my heart. So many times, I have to admit, dissing the moment. In favor of have to do this, need to do that, have to be here, have to go there. Not attending to this moment, not being serious with this moment. And if it isn't an activity, it's a rising in the mind of, oh yeah, I know what this moment is about. Yeah, I know this one. Oh, I've even been here before. This is the same moment, the same kind of thing I've had, and sometimes I've had it for years, decades, my whole life. It's always been this way, I tell myself. Yeah, I missed it. I missed the moment. I missed the opportunity to be serious with this moment because I was so sure I already knew what it was. Suzuki Roshi goes on to offer a little more in terms of a way to find our way moment by moment. He offers, we have to forget everything which we have in our mind and discover something quite new and different moment after moment. We have to forget everything which we have in our mind. Again, the words leapt off the page. forgetting everything that's in our mind. He makes an analogy in this chapter that was so real for me because it has been an activity that I have been very engaged in for the past year or so in various ways. He talks about doing house cleaning of the mind and literally taking everything out of the mind, looking at it, and then deciding to keep or not to keep. He actually suggests taking everything out, and then he kindly says something along the lines of course, there may be some things that you want to keep, and you can put them back. It made me smile. This is so alive for me because I have been engaged in cleaning out the home where we live. And this process of picking things up and examining and deciding, still useful or not, set it aside or find a way to recycle, etc., etc. Right, but the thing that is that I think that Tsuki Roshi is pointing to is this wonderful place and sometimes painful place and sometimes joyous place of examination, of looking, perhaps as if we have never seen it, or perhaps revisiting it again, not being sure that it is the same as it was. How is it now? These things that I have felt, it will be this way for the rest of my life. When I look closely, I see not so true. There's always something different when I look closely. It is not exactly the same as it was the moment before, or week before, month before, decade before. I'm not the same. Dogen Zenji says, we become heirs to ourselves. Moment after moment. We talked the other day about, there was a beautiful story that David read us about polishing the tile. And for me, this polishing the tile, polishing me with each rub of the grit or whatever you're polishing with, revealing a new me in each moment. Now this, now that, now this, now something else. Continually revealing in each moment. And this forgetting, forgetting everything that's in our mind. Wow. What could that look like? I learned that forgetting was not something to put in the good category. It was a problem. Forgetting to bring home my homework assignments from school. Forgetting to be on time for an appointment. Forgetting where I put something and then needing to spend hours searching for it. this forgetting was a big problem. And so I spent a lot of energy learning how to remember things. So this instruction to forget everything that's in our mind, wow, kind of a radical idea for me. Forget everything in your mind. Fortunately for me, not because I am happy about the circumstances, but because I have been given such a gift from my mother, who is dying of two kinds of dementia. And I am watching that, and she has been teaching me all her life. Yeah, this is how it is for us humans when we love people. Finding my way in this moment, this one with the tears arising. She continues to teach me as she dies. She is helping me learn and experience what it can mean to forget what's in my mind. The state of her mind has made it so that it is close to impossible for her to talk normally. She can speak. There's nothing wrong with her voice, nothing wrong with her ability to make words, but the mind cannot put thoughts together and cannot communicate and figure out how to do all of that. This became very apparent to me earlier this year. And this is quite a painful thing for me. We've always been very close and always talked. And of course, and now this is going away. And the teaching arose for me of, What if talking, as is our normal human way, was not the only way to communicate? What if it's not the only way to be intimate? What other ways are possible? Forget about talking. It's off the table. Now what? Now what? Finding my way, moment by moment, my own true way, moment by moment. How can I reach her now that words fail? This was quite a wonderful opportunity. Again, not because I was happy with the circumstances, but because it offered me this chance to forget what was in my mind about the only way to communicate, about the only way to connect with her. And I have been finding my way moment by moment over this past year with many different ways to be intimate with my mother who is here now. Not the mother that was here 30 years ago or 40 years ago or 50 years ago. The one who is here now. And Dogen Zenji, he talks about this this Buddha way to study ourselves, and then he says to forget ourselves. I think this can be touched on many levels in many ways. And for me, this this forgetting myself, I think what's alive here is this forgetting what's in my mind. And knowing that this great oneness, this great emptiness, this great reservoir of infinite possibilities is polishing the tile moment after moment. The tile that is me. Thank you. Please sit comfortably, and this is the time we'll have our Dharma dialogue, and I invite everyone to come forth in whatever way. Andy.
Gratitude for what you've communicated and how you've done. Thank you.
Andy, would you be willing to say just a little bit about what was communicated? What did you hear that touched you?
Her heart.
Yeah.
And our hearts, the capacity that we have to feel.
Yeah.
And contribute.
Wonderful. I love her hearts and our hearts. Your true way, the universal true way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not either or. Right? The heart, our true heart is the universal heart. And we have received the universal heart.
Yeah. A gift.
Yeah. Thank you.
Into my mind. So this thing about forgetting and the amazing sharing that you just did about experiencing I guess a different kind of forgetting with your mother. I am always wrestling, struggling, and I know I'm not alone with the people who aren't forgetting anything. We're clinging to so many things. I had to clean my car out or just rush before the rain to vacuum it because some friends and a family member are going to the inaugural address to shake things up a little. Who knows, you know, and so they're taking my car. And this truck went by, and it's one of those trucks that reminds me of the trucks that they have in different parts of the country where they purposefully blow coal at people. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's very disturbing. And you can find it. There's a name for it. They like can turn this switch, and when they go by pedestrians or bikers, they blow this coal, this black soot. And so this not forgetting anything, this like clinging to everything that you think is true, being with that as a person of the way, you know, opening to that. I also am going to go to Boston on Saturday to march, and So thinking about the sign I'm going to make, and I don't want to, if I get to it, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. And so, I mean, just this whole thing with forgetting and the thing of the emptiness of, and the reservoir of possibilities and the beginner's mind and staying in the moment of what just is before me, before us, seems so pertinent in so many ways. Mm.
Yeah,
I have to say, it's the recently the some of the things that you've had on your blog. I love the delicacy of that, and anyone can read it, right? Maybe everybody has, I don't know, about how we somehow have to step forward into the moment, and what are we going to step forward with? What am I going to step forward with? Am I going to be fighting? Am I going to think I know? How do I love? How do I open the hand of thought? In a sharing way.
Yeah. I think,
without words. Though,
yeah, you know? Yeah, wonderful. Wonderful reflection here, I mean, of this moment in time, this moment here in the meditation hall, but also this moment in the life of this country and the world, and this calling to step forward, and how to forget and not forget, or forget and have remembered the purpose. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking this morning we read the sutra from the Dhammapada about the, so he hit me, you know, if I brood on this, that guy cut me off in traffic. And if I hold that in my heart, then the suffering continues. Mm-hmm. How do we step forward and communicate with our life, not just our words, meeting it with open heart? Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Brian.
So the house cleaning of the mind resonated with me a little bit. I had it a number of months ago through a college reunion. I ran into an old friend and got to dig up an event that took place way back when that seemed huge, and I still think of it as probably one of the four or five defining stories of my whole life, and not in a good way. But it was funny because I'd always wanted to talk to somebody about it, so I ran into this old friend and we got deep, deep into it. And once it was all out on the table, I looked at it, I thought, it's just so clear, this is just a story, it's unbelievable. And it used to be so real and vibrant, and I know there are ways it impacted my relationships going forth, the way I think. And I hadn't really thought about it in a while. But again, when it was on the table, and I saw it was just a story, something changed in it then, and I think some of the things it's done in my life changed a little bit then. And it just makes me wonder what else is lurking up there, not only the active stories, but the ones that have sort of been filed away. I had that and one other thing, intimacy. Sessions always feel very intimate to me, a way to be with people, even in silence, just in activity, feels... you end up feeling connected by the time you leave. So, and I'm one of these day hikers, and I'm leaving today. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the path for a brief time here with all of you. So that's kind of what came up for me.
Thank you so much. You know, and what arose for me when you were sharing that was... we see these stories when we see them. We don't know, it arises as look at that, you know, and that's not something we can make happen. we don't control this great universe in us. We think we do, and sometimes things work out just right, and we think, oh wow, I have influence here. I have control here, you know, but that's a delusion. Right? So yeah, I appreciated that. Wow, look at that. And then, oh, I wonder what else is in there, right? You know, but it will do as it pleases with us. It will arise or not. So I think this thing that Suzuki Roshi, the message I held in my heart with this, to attend to each moment, this being serious with each moment. It's just serious, you know, but it can also be play with this moment, jump for joy with this moment, you know, cry with this moment, be angry with this moment, you know, whatever. It be disappointed, be discouraged, be laughing, however it arises.
There's something so wonderful in the recognition about the justice story. And we talked a few days back about how the mind works. So in this moment in which we're so serious and paying attention, there's so much going on. Mm-hmm. And we can't actually experience all of the things that are happening, this rich tapestry of experience. Billions and billions of things happening. We can only really pay attention to a few things. And then the narrative mind takes those few things and keeps them in the closet or whatever, and then strings them together. So when you say just a story, that's what you're recognizing. These narratives are very limited. And they're not representations of what actually happened, because there's no way to do that. But the mind loves to do that. It's what minds do. It's just so cool, actually, that we can do that. We're story-making animals. But to know that every time we tell it, you'll tell a story about this moment in the future. You will. And just to know that you can't do it justice, ever. And to be suspicious when they come out of the closet and you go, and maybe you'll put it back in for a little while. And then, no, this goes to Goodwill. And on we go. Yeah, it's quite beautiful and touching.
Yeah, thank you.
Speaking of Brian. Yeah.
Well, and how in our practice we don't do this just once. Right. I love you really getting that. It's not like, oh, great, now I've seen through my stories. Yep. Right? Yeah. The 1,000.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that our practice asks us to kind of give up moment after moment. You know, wow, I'm feeling really intimate. Great. And then what now? Yeah. What about now? What about now? And that in a sense is the muscle we're developing of opening the hand, and then of course it closes. And it's great. It's so important that we do have a story. I mean, this retreat is a story that we're all entering, and Buddhism is a story that we're playing in. And we get to play in these stories, and then one after the other, with tears, with laughter, however. Oh, what now? What now? Yeah.
And so one thing that really touched me was this, how desperately we're looking for this guidebook, you know, the instruction manual, and since we aren't issued one, we kind of write our own through, you know, our own experiences, right? And we search for meaning about our experiences, and we have this story. So this is what happened to me, and that, you know, that happened, and I didn't like that, and we build this whole story around, and then we file it away, right? and look for new situations that match, you know, the set of stories that we've stored, right? And this is actually an incredibly useful thing. I mean, this is one of the fundamental things about being a human being, right, is that we can create meaning out of our experience, and then we can look out at the world and try and find new situations that match, you know, experiences that we've had. And human beings are such incredible pattern-matching animals. I mean, this is like the key thing that we're able to do as human beings, right? That you can't even teach a computer to you know, how to do vision and pick, oh yeah, that's a window, and this is a chair, and it's so wired into human beings is to, you know, examine things and match to these rules, because we want certainty, right? Laura was talking about, you know, this deep desire for certainty. Just tell me what the rules are so I can, you know, I know how to live my life, and ultimately there's no rule book, you know, and we have to keep re-examining our theories of the world, and not that we can just throw them away, but we have to keep looking at them and say, so is this really so, this, you know, this thing that I believe, and you know, there's evidence to the contrary, and often we reject it, right? We only see the stuff that matches our ideas of how things are. Mm-hmm. And to actually look at the reality and say, you know, so reality doesn't actually match this story that I have. Maybe I'll try examining the reality rather than, you know, just assuming that it fits my story. And maybe that's a little bit of how we find our own true way, right? There's this really intentional thing about it, I think, right? Because in one sense, anything we do is our true way, right? I mean, it's, you know, all of our karma, and it causes us to react however it is that we react. But I don't think that's what we're talking about here, right? There's this, you know, examination, this, yeah, I really want to lead an authentic life, you know, how do I do this? And just keeping the question in mind is really the thing. You know, how do I work this? You know, how can I best express my true nature is the thing itself, right? We don't have to have an answer. We just have to move into our life in that way.
The day you look at your rule book and say, this isn't working.
Right. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah.
And that day is every day, mm-hmm. because we find the true way. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, now I've got the true way, and then we make a new rule book. The true, we call it the true way, and we take it back from retreat. Thank goodness.
And there is then the other side of all this that sometimes we go to this place. There is no rule book. I'm free. Mm-hmm. And it's such a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. You know, gone beyond. That denies our humanity, mm-hmm. at right. that point. Right. And it's a danger in Zen, because there is an opening to thusness, mm-hmm. that happens just naturally. And then, of course, we cling to it and make it a thing about ourselves. I have no more small self. I'm just free. I don't feel anything more. And then talk about those machines that can't discriminate. We actually turn into what I call Zen robots. Mm. Right? I'm not human anymore. I don't have feelings like the rest of you people. Yeah. And that gets us in big ethical problems. It's really quite serious. Serious.
Yeah, and it's actually, you know, what comes up for me is, at least one of the things that arises for me is the example from old of the samurai. Mm. You know, yeah, we're all one, you know, so it doesn't matter, right? And it does matter. It totally matters. What we do matters.
We had something to say about what you said. You can tell when we get excited. All of us will.
My money's worth
it. And so for you, you will get a guidebook later.
Oh, great. Oh, so you'll get the guidebook.
Yeah, right on your way out.
But she'll find it's empty.
Oh, man, there's nowhere to land here.
I'll keep it short because I'm the timekeeper. But, I was cleaning up the garage today, and, you know, Suzuki makes all this stuff sound so easy and simple, mm-hmm. and maybe just trying to write it in a book and communicate through limited command of English. But it's so much easier to clean up somebody else's crap. It's really good preparation because I have this room of all these things which are like, they feel like ingrained into my skin that I can only take, you know, this much of the things for 2.5 years. And I have, you know, this keyboard I got for free as a gift this one night. I was bartending. Hey, man, you want a Casio, whatever? Yeah, bro. And,
you know, I'll take it.
So every week I go and I go through every little thing and I'm like, oh man, I finished, I'm good, and I look and I have one little trash bag and oh shit. So
it's such an important point, you know, the clinging, because it really is hard. You know, that it sounds a little bit easy what we've been saying. So these narrative threads come up and we just go, okay, I'm taking them out, I'm donating them, I'm trashing them.
Yeah.
But really, most of them we bring back in. And we just stuff the closet full again. Over and over and over. This is too precious to me. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. Right? This is who I am. Mm-hmm. And that's this process, I think you pointed to it, Laura, so beautifully, and it can't be said enough. We're not doing it. You know, we're not even cleaning. The whole metaphor of cleaning out the closet is a little bit bogus. We're not doing it. But Zen does seem to reveal. It's almost like the closet gets really, really big. Right? And then there's all this space between the things, and we get to go, oh, that, this, that, the other thing. Then maybe we loosen our grip just a little bit, and then it flies out the door. Joanne comes to your apartment and picks up your case. Yeah, so it's not all up to us. Our job is to face our life. Our job is not to get rid of stuff.
And one of the stories I've heard about this is that these stories, as Steve was saying, we collect in a big bag and we lug the bag around behind us, and the bag gets bigger and bigger and heavier, all the stuff. And if we try to go in and do it by an act of will, empty the bag, they just find a way to get back in. But the image is when you open up the bag and find a dead mouse and a little, you know, piece of wood and something else, it's not hard to get rid of it when you see it for what it is.
Right.
So when you actually see the story as the story, or see through, and then, as Melissa said, it goes by itself. This is not... Because it sounds like, okay, I'm just going to clean my mind. And then I'm going to forget. So what are the things I need to forget? So there is our vow is to see into, to see through, to see the true nature of this moment. And then everything happens, everything does. In the time, in its own time, and our job is just to come here. Yeah. So let's sit again.